This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. You know, most of us don't plan to fall ill or plan having to go to hospitals or have to live with a chronic health condition. But of course, for many of us, this probably is inevitable. So if or when it does happen, how many Malaysians actually have the knowledge to know when and where to seek healthcare and how to navigate our healthcare system? So the question is, are we sufficiently equipped and informed to make decisions for our health? Considering how unhealthy we are as a nation, I think it answers itself there. We will be discussing that today in the final episode of our mini-series on healthcare accessibility, where today I want to explore why health literacy is vital to improve our access to healthcare. And joining me to discuss this, Associate Professor Dr. Adina Abdullah from the Department of Primary Care Medicine at the Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya. Hi, Prof. Adina. How are you today?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you very much for having me today. I'm so happy to be here.
Absolutely. Such an interesting topic, I think. And, we do hear the term health literacy being bandied about, and it came up in the National Health and Morbidity Survey, which I'll get to a little bit later. But perhaps we need to understand what exactly does health literacy mean? And if you could break down, what it looks like from, each individual's perspective.
Okay, so health literacy as a definition has four main components. It is to do with the degree to which individuals have the capacity to find, understand, and use information and services to inform their health-related decisions and actions for themselves and sometimes for family members and others. But health literacy as a concept is closely related to literacy. So when people talk about literacy, we think about reading and writing, right? So what it is the ability of an individual to function within their environment and situation, to navigate that. So you imagine now, if people cannot read and write, it's very difficult for them to navigate the world, as to say. But now it's one step further. If you can't use computers, you're not digitally literate, it's very difficult for you to manipulate your environment as well. So health literacy just means to be literate within the health domain when you're managing your health.
All right. So those are the four components that you mentioned. Okay. So essentially what you're saying is it goes beyond just having information itself. It means knowing what to do, how to behave or how to figure out things, what you should be doing, right? But can I also suggest that there's something very fundamental about health literacy in that it means understanding your own agency and ownership over your health? Would that be an appropriate way to look at it as well?
Yeah, definitely. So from the individual point of view, a health literate person or patient knows how to maintain their health. And like you say, know when to go, when they need to seek help and where should they go to seek help. So for example, they know that they need to exercise. We're just talking about knowing, because I know I can see from your face sometimes you know but you don't do, but never mind. We just focus on whether they know or not know. Okay, so they know how long they need to exercise, 150 minutes, 100 minutes, they know how to choose a healthy food, they know which one is a better choice, they know where to go when they're ill, they know which departments they should go to, or they got an accident, they should go to emergency department. They have just fever and flu, they should go to a clinic, kesihatan, or health clinic. They know all this. So if you take COVID-19 as an example, then a health literate individual would know that it is caused by a virus. It can be transmitted through air and touch. There is a vaccine that can reduce the morbidity or the impact of the virus on their health. And for now, there are medications, antivirals as well, that they can take to if they are infected with the disease. So that's the whole environment of people who are health literate. They will be able to know all this information.
So what explains the gap between knowing and doing?
Okay. So I've been in primary care for a long time, nearly more than 10 years. So what I found is people really do focus on the behavior, how to change people's behavior. So there are many interventions that are focusing on changing behavior, and there are many different theories that you can look at or use to change people's behavior. But I also found out, especially in our community, the knowledge is also not there. So if you just focus on the behavior without asking whether they do have the knowledge first or not, for example, you just ask someone to write and they can't write, and you just give them skills to write, but you then didn't realize that they actually also cannot read, then you are focusing on different things. So, but just focusing on the reading without giving them the skill to write, you're also not doing the same thing. So changing behavior and health literacy should come together. And of course, there is a gap, but I think we have to focus on it in an equal way. You cannot just focus on changing people's behavior, but you also need to know whether they do have the knowledge, do they have the information to make that change.
So earlier I mentioned the National Health and Morbidity Survey. So the one that was carried out in 2019 found that 1 in 3 Malaysians have low health literacy. So what does that mean? Does that refer to the lack of knowledge that you just mentioned?
Okay, so again, health literacy is made up of 4 domains to do with information. One is to access, second is to understand, third is to appraise, and fourth is to apply. So it's not just looking for information, it's not just having the information, but it's also appraising it. Is this the right information? And also to apply it. Oh, so I have to exercise 150 minutes. How do I do that? So those are the domains of health literacy again. When we talk about low or limited health literacy, what we're talking about is that people who do not have the required level to be able to function at these 4 domains. But I would say I would shy away from putting a label, actually. There's a lot of researchers in health literacy as well that are shying away from putting labels, because what does that mean? If you told me I'm low health, so does that mean I'm deemed to have poor health? No, not really. And does that mean I'm worse than other people? Not really. So, but the research that looked at this low or limited health literacy is important for policymakers, because then they will know what is the extent of the problem. Where are these people that has limited health literacy resides, or what type of characteristics do they have, so that we can target intervention for them. But at an individual level, I don't think we should be worrying too much if you have low health literacy. It just means that you might need further help, either from your healthcare providers or even the healthcare centers that you get your health from.
Okay. So I would like to explore that individual perspective a little bit later on, because it relates to then how do we know what to look for. But at that policy and the population-wide level, you know, you've said that it is important to know the level of health literacy, because then you know what needs to be strengthened or targeted, right? I guess, you know, if I put it into the context of this series that where we have been talking about access challenges for people to access healthcare, whether it's in terms of resources, even physical infrastructure, right? Physically accessing healthcare. So in the context of this concept, why is good health literacy important? Would it actually affect people's ability to access the services that they need?
Yeah, definitely. Because the consequence of limited or low health literacy has been researched quite extensively. And they found that these people are more likely not to adhere to medications. They don't know how to take care of themselves. They are more likely to pay more, you know, for healthcare. You know, that's worse. And they have a higher risk of hospitalization and even death. They are more likely to suffer from medical errors and, have more days off work. So they got lower wages due to that. So if you look at it as a whole, health literacy is there for individuals to be able to take care of their health. So if you don't have that information, you won't be able to know not just where, but when to access care. Some of our patients, as you know, BFM have been very good at looking into health issues. Take breast cancer, for example. A lot of our communities still present late. That leads to higher costs because you have to pay more for your treatment and poorer outcome. Whereas in terms of access, in terms of resources, in terms of hospitals that are available for these services, they are there. They are there. You can go into KKM, you can go to private. We have like world-renowned breast surgeons. But why do people still come late?
All right. Let's go for a quick break. And when we come back, explore a little bit about that individual level. So, I mean, you know, we don't want to be too concerned about the label of being less health literate. But at the end of the day, it's also important to know that, you know, how can we help people improve in terms of finding the right information, appraising and applying it? I like that a lot, right? Because I want to explore a little bit about how we've had years and decades of health information, awareness campaigns, but there's still a gap in terms of appraising and applying that information. Perhaps we can look at how different stakeholders can support individuals as well. So I'll continue this conversation with Associate Professor Dr. Adina Abdullah from the Department of Primary Care Medicine at Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya, when we come back from the break. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. Joining me today, Associate Professor Dr. Adina Abdullah at the Department of Primary Care Medicine, Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya. It's the final episode of our Mind the Health Gap series. We've been discussing various challenges when it comes to access to healthcare. And today, health literacy, which, you know, Dr. Adina has explained as being able to find, understand, and use information and services related to improving our health and well-being, as well as, of course, treating or perhaps addressing when we do have medical conditions or problems, and being literate enough, not just in terms of traditional reading and writing, but even being digitally literate so that you can function within the environment and the situation in order to navigate the system and access those services that you need. So low health literacy is something that has been used to describe some Malaysians, and we've come to equate it with the fact that we do tend to fare poorly in terms of some health indicators, especially with things like non-communicable diseases, where a lot of it, whether it's prevention or management of it, relates very much to individual behaviors and how you manage compliance to treatment or practicing healthy lifestyles. So I guess the question is also, is there any amount of poor health literacy among Malaysians in the first place, Dr. Adina? We're not lacking in terms of information, I feel, as well as, I mean, we are a pretty digitally savvy lot here in Malaysia. Many people are connected and use social media as well. What do you think? What has led to poor health literacy among us?
So that is a very, very, very important question. However, I am at the moment, I probably don't have the answer yet. But what we can do is we can come up with a few hypotheses by looking at what are the associated factors with low health literacy, because researchers in Malaysia has done that. I myself has done that as well in patients with type 2 diabetes. So what is clear, and not just in Malaysia, but everywhere, is that poor health literacy or limited health literacy is associated with age. So the older you are, the more likely you are to have poor health literacy. There are some association with gender, but in my own study, I didn't see that. So women seems to be better health literate than men. So yay, woman. But socioeconomic status, definitely. Lower education level and also household income. So this actually highlights the role of health literacy in the social determinant of health. So meaning we know that person from poor income have poorer health, and people think it's because of their income, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's because they couldn't get the information that they need to get to where they, to access the care that they need, you know, rather than just being poor. Because in Malaysia, how much do you have to pay to go and see a doctor? 1 ringgit? 5 ringgit? It's very affordable. But maybe it's not the money, but it's actually the information that they don't get. And but in my own study, I also found language to be important. So they have to be fluent in English, and then they have very good social support. These are the people that have higher health literacy. So knowing all this, we kind of like can make some hypotheses as to why there are still pockets of population that has low health literacy. Probably they don't have good enough social support. Probably their command of English or language that's been mainly used in healthcare. So in Malaysia, not just English, but certain population cannot speak Malay even. So how are they going to be able to access healthcare in the public sector if they don't know the information that's been disseminated? And we know this because lately, even the COVID-19 briefing, press briefing has sign language. You know, we suddenly want to reach out to the people who can't hear, because we know if they can't get the information, they can't be empowered to do the right thing. So talk about the our orang asli, talk about people who only speak Mandarin or local Chinese dialect, you know. So these are the bigger population that we need to reach out to improve their health literacy. So it's not their own fault that they have low health literacy, but maybe because of how the healthcare settings are being managed or organized.
You know, you said that some of the work you've done is in the area of type 2 diabetes. You know, if we could look at that lack of information and knowledge of how to manage the disease, how does it play out when it comes to diabetes, for instance, perhaps some situations that you've encountered with patients?
So whenever people talk about health literacy, because I also mentioned that there is associated with education level. But in diabetes is a very good example of like even well-educated people have very poor diabetes control. So that in a way to say that your high education level does not mean that you have high health literacy. That's why people say, oh, why can't we just measure education level? Just do literacy, then it will translate to health literacy. But it is not that way at all. Because I remember one patient who's a staff nurse. Then she was diagnosed with diabetes. But she herself could not navigate, you know, the different medication that she had to take, the different regime that does not suit her working time. You know, she works shift, so if she have the insulin, the timing seems to change. So in that sense, she herself recognized that she's not health literate enough to manage her diabetes, even though she's a staff nurse, because she probably wouldn't not able to modify her own lifestyle and get the information that she needs to manage the disease adequately.
You know, and we hear a lot of these kinds of challenges among people where they're given the information perhaps at the point of diagnosis. Due to our public health system, sometimes the follow-ups are quite infrequent as well, right? There's a long period in between. And we hear of individuals then going home and finding that, you know, this doesn't suit the way that they you know, like you said, perhaps the medication doesn't suit them, or perhaps a certain dietary recommendations given to them is just not practical for them. And yet, I'm wondering, is it a physical barrier where they can't go back to the healthcare provider and say, you know, I'm having trouble, I just can't manage. Is it a physical barrier? Is it a psychological one where they feel like, a doctor has told me this, so I can't go and question them? What do you think?
So I would like to highlight the fact that when you mention chronic disease, we've been battling diabetes for many years, right? It's been our number one nemesis for many years. But why only the last 5 years or the last few years we start to talk about health literacy? So the idea comes from the fact that we know, healthcare providers know, we can't do it alone. So the old model of paternalistic type of healthcare is gone out the window, together with the empowerment of the community. You know, our community are more activated now. They know what they want. They fight for what they want. Similar things happen within the healthcare setting. And it actually occurred concurrently, not just the patient that wants more control, but also the doctors realizing that they can't do everything. So there is this new concept called the shared decision making, which is not so new now, but the fact that doctors now relinquishing some of their power or their control and say, let's do this together. Because we know that at the end of the day, it is the patient. Like you say, the gaps are so big. We see them once every 3 months, every 4 months. In between, who's going to manage the disease? It's the patient. So we know that we have to, what I call, democratize information, liberated the information, not just for the doctors. The doctors have to share it with the patient so that together, you can have a better management of their disease or improving their health. And that has been a struggle on both sides. So a struggle from the doctor's perspective is that how do they speak in a way that they give out information that is understandable to their patient. But patient also struggle in a way that, now I have to take ownership of my health. Or now I have to understand this information. And from the doctor's point of view, we know that part is to do with health literacy. And we know some of them are not ready. So the elderly, they are not ready to get all this information. They probably need a lot of support. They're probably not ready to do it on their own. So we know that now. So by doing research in health literacy, you kind of like know who needs more help in terms of managing their own health on their own and who are more ready to do that. Because in our population, not everyone are able to do it equally.
Mm. So what could it look like when some who are more ready, you know, what kinds of tools perhaps or different roles that community groups could play? What could it look like for somebody who is better prepared to manage their disease beyond the control of their healthcare provider?
So this is what the Yang Berbahagia Minister of Health, Kari Jamaluddin, was talking about too when he talked about community empowerment as part of the white paper, and he mentioned the word health literacy. So this is where we want to get to. So once the community are empowered and they have good health literacy, then the role of the healthcare system or the healthcare providers is just to facilitate those information that they need and to monitor the progress. And to be there when they need when they need more information. Because like you say, sometimes we get information, but we've got a question on it, right? Like we know COVID-19 is caused by virus, but we want to know, what type of virus or things like that. So it's not just one way, it's two ways. So the healthcare system has to be ready once the community are empowered to continue this working together and supporting each other.
And I want to come back to that point you made earlier about how some communities, perhaps even more vulnerable ones where language is a barrier, they only think of going to the clinic kesehatan or clinic desa when something is wrong, but otherwise there's a huge void in terms of the information that they have. So how can, again, the community play that role in terms of having information within the community rather than at the healthcare setting itself?
So I feel that improving health literacy is a whole system responsibility. And I think we see that with COVID-19 again, because you can't go anywhere without people talking about what it is and what you should do, what you shouldn't do, you know, at the banks, everywhere, at the school. But we don't see that, like, we don't see banks saying, don't take sugary drinks because it caused diabetes before, right? But it does, people fail to realize that health impacts everyone. You know, if someone has diabetes and unable to work, the bank might lose people who can deposit money in the bank, isn't it? I mean, so I think this is what our Ministry of Health is trying to say. Health is the business of everyone, not just Ministry of Health. So I think community empowerment needs everybody's help, media, even teachers. You know, you can start as early as teachers. And I know certain homes talk about health like normal, like, oh, are you going to eat that? or have you exercised? But some homes don't do that. But neighbors, so if you see your neighbor exercising, or you see one neighbor not haven't come out for a while, well, give a ring and ask them, do you want to come and walk with me? So everyone all together have to work to improve their health literacy level. Because my research showed that if the community, if the support system has high health literacy, you can support the others. Because, for example, in a family, we have one elderly person that has low health literacy, but the grandchildren has high health literacy. They can access information on the internet. They know how to discern right and wrong information. They can support their grandparents by saying that, oh, no, grandma, don't do that. Don't do this. You know, take this or take that. So as the community health literacy level raised, everyone will be raised together to support the others.
You've mentioned the pandemic a few times, and of course that one benefit of the way information was given out during the pandemic is that everybody knows about the virus, about masking, about vaccination and all that. But at the same time, a lot of misinformation came along with it, Dr. Adina. And how do we then balance that, right? And where people became so invested in finding information that perhaps they even went down the path of believing in misinformation. I guess, how do we balance that? And again, it comes back to people appraising the information and knowing how to apply it, right?
Yeah. So, of course, the ability to discern right information is in that appraised domain of health literacy. So the higher the health literacy level you have, the better you are at discerning. But I think overall, we can make we can have better programs that let individuals or community know, how do I detect right from wrong information? I think there was some effort to do it during the COVID-19, but of course, we were so overwhelmed by the pandemic that most of the effort is just by giving out information rather than saying, oh, stop. This is how you know whether this is a right information or the wrong information. And another thing I want to allude to was the community health information that we discussed earlier, because I know some of this misinformation were propagated by people, well-meaning families and friends and neighbors who use the WhatsApp group to send out all this information. So if the community is discerning, they say, oh, no, this is not right, so I will not share. So even by improving the community health literacy level, you'll be able to stop the circulation of misinformation. And you'll be able to, you need to give out skills for them to know which one is the right and the wrong.
Trust in healthcare authorities is very important as well, isn't it, Dr. Adina?
Right, yeah. So another thing about health literacy research is that every time we ask people what is their main source of information, it's always healthcare provider. Who do you trust most? It's always healthcare provider. Who do you want to get your information from? Is healthcare provider. So as healthcare providers, we are very honored and we are very glad that you feel so highly about us. But the problem is we do not have enough time to do everything in one consultation that we see you. So I think what we have to realize is that a trusted source is important. So how do we create more trusted source within the community, within the healthcare system, and not just your doctors, maybe nurses, maybe equal patients, and patients that's been in the system for a long time. Then these people can then become the trusted source of information. Another thing to say about doctors being trusted also is that we have to be careful not to misuse the trust. I know some doctors use their position to disseminate misinformation for their own gains. And that type of misinformation is called disinformation. It's when people have a proper plan and propaganda just to get people to believe in things that will benefit them. So I think we should not discount the fact that there are some information out there, disinformation, people who are out to mislead people for their own gain. So that is even more sinister and has a worse background to it.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, earlier when you talked about an individual being literate, so having the skills to be able to function within their environment and situation, so not just in terms of language, but digital literacy as well, right? So what is the role of digital technologies in enabling us to become more health literate?
So I think that is an interesting observation. More and more digital health innovations are penetrating our healthcare system. And I think it is an important tool towards empowering patients, especially like we talked about the fact that it's a long-term condition. There are many periods of time when patients are not in contact with the healthcare system or the healthcare providers. So they need some sort of monitors that can give them information in terms of how they are doing. So this type of wearables or monitors, blood pressure monitors at home, they will be tools to support us in terms of improving patients' health literacy. But you have to be cautioned in a way that studies have shown that people with low or limited health literacy are less likely to adopt this type of innovation. So we might create a gap where only the literate will use, and they get more literate compared with those that has a low literacy level. So then when people design this type of services, they need to be aware that they want to bring in the people with low health literacy as well, not just those that are good, because they are more than willing to use the service. But you have to be wary. How many of those out of 10, how many you are missing out because they have low health literacy or they don't want to be?
So you cannot have policies that assume everyone is at that level of, you know, digital access and tech savviness, right? Yeah. So then on that note, on that broader policy level, do you have thoughts, or has your research, you know, come up with some recommendations as to how we can improve health literacy when it comes to, you know, health reforms, right? Our minister is talking about a health reform white paper. What are some areas that do you think we could be looking at?
So just to touch on the white paper that was mentioned by our Yang Berbahagia health minister, so he mentioned four broad areas, which are equitable access, that includes private-public partnership. Second is the sustainable healthcare financing to do with maybe a national insurance, maybe governance. And the last one was the what he called bringing health back to healthcare or community empowerment. And I think in the last domain, he specifically mentioned health literacy. But actually, health literacy will be important in most of the domain, especially the second domain. So in America, all the way back in 2006, the reason why they focused on health literacy was when they wanted to roll out the health insurance bill by Obama, or what is known as Obamacare. Because they know without a good health literacy level in the community, people will access care indiscriminately. So then you will have wastage of care. And you will have a not effective healthcare delivery. So they wanted to improve the community healthcare level so that people who access care are the ones that really need it. And people who need to manage their health at home are able to do that without the help of the healthcare sector. So I think health literacy basically is everywhere within the white paper reform. I would suggest that the fact that people are aware of the problems with limited health literacy is one way of bringing focus to health literacy already. Number two is that to continue research into how we can improve. Because actually, to tell you the truth, in Malaysia, there's very limited studies to look at what intervention works. we can talk about overseas, but in local setting, there's not many studies that looked at what intervention might work. There are a lot of studies that look at associated factors, and these studies are already important in identifying those vulnerable groups that we talk about that we need to be more focused on in terms of improving health literacy level.
And for individuals, you know, for those who are listening right now, I guess it's a bit too abstract, right, to say be more health literate. It doesn't mean anything to me or to my older relatives, perhaps. But what would be meaningful to them if you could, you know, if you will want to urge them to understand what we're trying to get at today, what would be most meaningful to them?
I think the idea that health is something that you can improve yourself as a person, something that you can make better, something that you can manipulate even. Some people lost that power in terms of their health to say that, oh, it's when I'm ill, I go and see the doctor. The doctor will help me. You know, the whole idea of being health literate is to know what you can do, what the doctor can do, what the community can do, then you all can work together to improve your health. It is very important to feel empowered when it comes to your health, but then guided with the information that you know or the doctor can give you, you can then take up that important behavioral change towards better health. I think feeling empowered is the first step to better health literacy. Because once you know that you have the power to change and do something about your health, then you look for information, then you appraise it, then you understand, then you apply it. But if you feel that, oh, it's something abstract, something outside of myself, something the doctors do to me, then you will not try and improve your health literacy.
So at the end of the day, I mean, you could have the best doctors, but it's you yourself who will make that difference, right?
Correct.
Thank you. And on that note, I think that's something that all of us can take away with us. Thank you so much, Dr. Adina. I've been speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Adina Abdullah from the Department of Primary Care Medicine at the Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya. This has been Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.